do we start?
Hey, it's Aga and Werner, and this is the Catching the Next Wave podcast, where we discuss the future of design. Today we have a really special guest for me, Jörgen Bang Jensen, who for the last 9 years was a CEO of a Polish telecom play, which started as an underdog and then became the first mobile provider in Poland under Jörgen's supervision. Before that, you actually started as an entrepreneur in Denmark, got sold to the Danish telecom, right?
No, to Capgemini, French.
Capgemini.
French consultancy.
Okay.
But my main client was one of the telcos in Denmark, yeah.
And that's how you became one of the youngest, if not the youngest, CEO in Denmark.
That is also correct. I got some time and a little bit of funding, and I took myself an MBA in England.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I got a call and said, could you come back to the telco, where I had used to work as a consultant, to implement some of the ideas that we had early on. Through different funny incidents, I ended up being the CEO of the mobile arm of the telco in Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
And I was indeed the youngest in the group of that management group. In what is now TDC, I was for 7 years, disagreed on some strategic moves and left.
Mm-hmm.
Spent 6 months doing not so much. Worked in Netherlands, by the way, in Maastricht, uh-huh, for what later became Vodafone. Back then it was called Libertel.
Uh-huh.
And then I got a call from a Norwegian guy saying, we have a project in Austria. It needs a helping hand. I was in Austria for a weekend, and I had a discussion with the CEO if he was the helping hand or I was the helping hand, with the effect that Sunday evening he resigned and I became the CEO.
That must have been a very interesting discussion,
yeah,
right?
No, it was very friendly. He just realized that here's a guy who's done it before. And he was an industrial guy, and he knew that mobile is all about services. Mm-hmm. And he had no clue. He had a lot of experience in producing bits and pieces, but he had no experience about customer service and consumer and so on. So it was clear that he would never be having the right view on things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, his focus was different. He became head of a consultancy, by the way, afterwards, and he's still I wouldn't say close friend, but a good acquaintance of mine, and I meet him once in a while, so we kept good contact.
You've been in Vienna for like 10 years?
I was there 10 years and then privately stayed on for another 2 years before moving to Poland in 2009.
So how did it happen?
I had three jobs in the process. One was in Sri Lanka, which is very far away from Denmark, where my two kids were living at the time. The other one was in Bahrain, also being halfway between Vienna and Copenhagen, so it was very convenient from a family point of view.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And also it was lovely. When I moved to Vienna in 1997, it was not so developed, not so modern as it is today. I have seen exactly the same in Warsaw when I came in 2009, number of restaurants, number of people who spoke English. You could see there was a certain development, both needed but also upcoming. And today, in the international community, maybe Werner can comment on that, nobody wants to leave Warsaw. Once you get here, you stay here.
I agree.
Nice.
That is the energy here.
It is the energy, it is the proximity of everything, it is the convenience, it's the safety, and the airport around the corner.
You've been in business, and in telecom business in particular, for so many years. How did it change in the last years?
We have the highest penetration of near-field communication payment terminals in the world, in Poland, because the moment that technology was ready to be introduced, was the moment where payment cards really took off in Poland. So all the terminals in Poland are ready for the near-field communication. So I started using the chip reader and sort of wirelessly years before my friends in Denmark. And the other one is the banking sector that has been developed rapidly over the past 10-15 years, and where the Polish banks for sure are some of the best in implementing and digitizing the customer experience. The fact that you come a bit later in the development sometimes help you in leapfrog some development.
When you came to Poland, this business was very, very different from what it is today. Mm-hmm. How did this change things?
Luckily for me, change in organizational behavior is slower than in technology. So there's still in Poland a cultural aspect in the management where the Scandinavian management model is still asked for, and that's why I could stay 9 years with play until I decided that 9 years was enough. Yeah. In Poland, you have very good engineers, you have a lot of aspiration to do stuff, but you also have uncertainty about, am I good enough to actually do it on my own? Mm-hmm. You still have in Poland higher power distance indicator, which means distance from management to employee. I always said when I lived in Vienna and after 10 years left as CEO, people asked, where are you going next? I said, I don't know, but I'm not going further east than Vienna. Warsaw physically is further east, but mentally further west. So Warsaw and the management culture and the leadership style and so on is more modern than even in some of the Western European countries.
Well, that's very interesting. I don't think that many people realize that, right?
Yeah, I think sometimes we forget what we have here in Warsaw.
Yeah. I know that at some point, Play also decided to go through digital transformation. And this is like trend that happens in the world. What does it mean? What does it mean to business?
Yeah, for me, it's different or refreshing to hear a mobile company going through digital transformation. Because usually my perception is that a mobile or a telco is kind of at the forefront of digital. Mm-hmm.
But it should be on the forefront because the service that telco is delivering is in its backbone. Digital. So it's the one industry where you can say everything is already digital in the production phase. A lot of companies are saying we want digital transformation, and then they think about what can we do, you know, establish a web page, maybe develop an app. But unless the whole value chain in the company is digital, then you don't get the real benefits of the digitization. Because the benefit for me as a consumer should not be just that the shop is open 24/7. That is nice. It's also nice sometimes not to speak to somebody and just, you know, do it at whatever point in time. But the next element in the digitization must be that by having the whole production chain digitized to the extent possible, mm-hmm. that you can actually make better products. Mm-hmm. So the customer experience becomes better because the product you can actually, and the service you can get is better because it's digitized. Mm-hmm. And it's not about cutting the workforce, saving money. It is about having a different customer experience. Mm-hmm. And I'm always emphasizing that the human interface is important, but it should be kept for the instances where a human interface is necessary. And a good experience can be a combination of digital and human. So there's a lot of processes in a, let's call it just as an example, in a mobile operation where you could start a service step as digital, then you can make it with human interaction, and then you continue with digital again at the end of the service delivery. When I did my MBA, we talked about I had my own company, which I sold to Capgemini, got a little money, got some time, and I did an MBA. And I remember I learned many things, but one of the few things I really remember was the notion of expectation, and the notion about how much patience do you have depends on how long the service delivery will be. And today, there's very often a mismatch between an expectation about waiting for a service compared to the actual service delivery. So here, digitization can help you in always matching the customer expectation of delivery time and delivery quality. One thing I also learned on this MBA is it's better to have consistent service. Even if it's bad, make it consistent. Once it's consistent, you can start making it better. But if it fluctuates, it's very difficult to do something about it. So it's better to be consistently bad than inconsistently good and bad.
I remember when we were talking at Play about what customer experience is all about, there were like those two parts. There was kind of improving the service as it was, yeah. and building the new value. How would you balance that?
I think digitization is not fixing things that are not working. Digitization will be only successful if you already have processes that are working and then you can extend the service delivery. The other element of digitization, which we have to mention, is artificial intelligence. The last bit is that the digitization is also about the consistency. Once you have something digitized, it also means you not only can present yourself as a company, but you also begin to know your customer better because you collect the data. It's the volume of the data that you begin to have available, for better or for worse. I think sometimes we are scared about it. I worked in a computer center in 1973 where we were thinking, Jesus Christ, it has my name and my number and what can it do with that? And we are all still alive and fine. So it's the volume of data, it's the fact that you in a digital process, it is the fact that your product, to the extent possible, data helps you the right decision. This is scary, where the bot, as it's called nowadays, eventually will say, I'm not sure you are picking the right thing, Aga. Maybe you should pick something else because historically that you need this instead. Is that good or is it bad? It's the same as today when you Google Italy, you begin to get advertising about trips to Italy. Some people say it's bad. For me, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I would rather have advertising about Italy than Azerbaijan if I'm looking at Italy. Why would I be interested in advertising about Azerbaijan? It is a development, and this is where society needs to be developing the legal framework and the ethics framework together with the business framework. Coming back to, is it about filling the holes? No, it's not. Digital for me is about thinking the whole value chain, and only when the processes are good, then you can digitize them. We all know the sort of typical example, which is Uber, which became big because it was cheaper. But in reality, it's the fact that you don't have to be able to pronounce a impossible Polish street name because you can just type it in. You don't need to be social. Today, you can drive with a driver that doesn't speak your language. Soon, there will be no driver at all because it will be a self-driving car. And you get out and you don't have to think about the payment because that's not already for you. So you don't have to interrupt your call if you're on a call. Or you know, it's just convenient if you like it. If you don't like it, take a traditional taxi and that's also fine. This is an example of where as much as you can in the service becomes digital. The only thing is you need to move from A to B. And since we haven't invented beaming yet,
unfortunately,
you need the car and you need that physical element of the service delivery. The rest is digital.
What is this value of customer experience for business these days?
I think the businesses are finding it harder and harder to differentiate. Mobile, let's take that as an example. It's a standardized service. Making a phone call is a standardized service. Otherwise, your phone wouldn't work across the globe. We see more and more standardization. The whatever advantage you have in the market because you invented something or you developed something innovative is maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks before your competitor comes up. So what can differentiate you at the end of the day is your customer service. Mm-hmm. And even on the cost level, we will see businesses, whether it's banks, insurance company, mobile operators, car producers, they can have a cost advantage for a certain period, but the competition will copy and will be catching up. And then what is left is the brand and the customer experience. Mm-hmm. Quite some years ago, I think about 25 years ago, I met a professor who talked about the future of marketing and said, we will have too many products, too many brands, and it is the story of the brand that will be the determining factor for us buying or liking this brand eventually, and the values around that brand. What I would say is that today, more and more people look at the values of the brand. Can I identify with this brand? And then the customer experience.
It's very refreshing to hear you talk about brand, because in my experience, being on the other side of delivering digital transformation, I think sometimes we forget about what that value of the brand is. I'm actually staying as a question to see if you react to this, is because you over-digitize so much. You focus on all the toys and the tools and the bots and all these magical things that you forget at the core sits a brand. The customer actually needs to resonate with the brand as well. Do you agree with that statement? Is it what you're kind of alluding to?
I've always said a strategy statement is only a strategy statement if it also tells what you're not doing. And you could say a brand statement or brand positioning is also only a positioning if it's telling you what you're not standing for, which customers you are not interested in, which service delivery you're not going to enter into. It's about the choice. We shouldn't be mistaking that people who are used to shop in a certain way would like to have that continued even if it becomes a digital experience. So we have seen it in Carrefour, Tesco, whatever. Now we have the self-service terminals. Is that good or bad? Is it a cost-saving measure or is it a customer experience measure? For me, it's convenient. I don't have to stand in line. I can find out beeping these articles myself and I'm quicker through. On top of that, I have certainty that each item has been scanned. It even adds a little bit value to the experience, that there's not a human being other than myself involved in this process. Does it save cost for the supermarket? Maybe, yeah, which is fine. Yeah. But for me, it's more a customer experience than it is a cost-saving measure.
Customer experience is not very easily bought by business. You know, like people on a face value, they understand that this is really important. But when it comes to implementation, it's a painful process, really. And why is it so?
It's a learning process for everybody. Businesses are used to have a certain view of the business. When you come or when somebody comes and say, now we need to focus on the customer experience, it is like, yeah, we do that all the time. Is it a new discipline? Do we understand it? It's like branding used to be, we are a brand, let's advertise on the football stadium, and now we are a bigger brand. Not necessarily. So I think it's just a matter of getting used to customer experience, user experience as a discipline, and that we will have it in all aspects of the service delivery that we are having. And that is where the new digital companies, let's call it Facebook, Amazon, Alibaba, Netflix, etc., because they are younger companies, they have realized it and they have built a whole business model around it, and where other businesses maybe are coming a little bit later. But for sure, today, when you buy a car, you get an app, you get a connectivity, you get data about your car. Until recently, it was fine if you could have a trip meter, you could see how far you have been traveling on this trip, what was your average consumption, and that was it. And now you can suddenly see what was your max speed, your minimum speed, where did you drive, how did you drive, was it economical, etc., etc. You can share this data with other people, so you begin to create a community. So we have community of, let's call it Skoda drivers, and they can compete against each other in being the most economical or whatsoever. Suddenly, the whole business of Skoda is not producing a car, but producing a driving experience. Mm-hmm. Let me take another example. Many years ago, I used to bicycle quite a lot. Then came the trainer. You could sit in the living room on your bike, you could train, and you could watch television. What do you do today? You sit on a trainer, it's connected to the internet. You're taking the same route as somebody else, and you're competing with them. This is an experience. It has nothing to do about the physical trainer. That hasn't developed a lot since I bought my first trainer, I think 30 years ago. But the whole experience is a completely different experience. I no longer watch the television. I'm competing with somebody else somewhere on the planet. It's registered, you can see your history, and so on and so forth. And it's digital.
Yeah, like you said, like new companies like Netflix or Zappos or so many others like Uber, they understand that the value or the importance of customer experience. And I'm not saying that the other companies don't understand it, but like you said, that they need to find a way to implement it. And if you were to recommend something, how should they think about it?
One of my own inspirations came from visiting a museum where I realized how much the digital experience enhanced the entire museum experience. I'm normally, whatever museum it is, I'm a 1 to 1.5 hour guy. That's how long I can get concentrated on paintings or old cars or whatever it is. And I went to a museum and 5 hours later realized I was still engaged because there was a lot of experiences where virtual reality, this was with augmented reality, this was with the sounds and stuff like this. And you could choose this, what you see in front of you is some old stuff, a few hundred years, interesting or not. But then you could say, I'm mostly interested in the historical aspects, or I'm more interested in the society aspects at the time. In an analog world, all of that would have to be written or told. You couldn't do that. It would be overwhelming and nobody would be interested. Here you could pick and choose, and it's all delivered digitally, and you could have a fantastic experience. So it was almost like being there 500 years ago. And then I realized, wow, if a museum can do this, then what can you not do in business?
Whenever I talk to companies, they are keen to make those changes, but there's always a problem of a chicken and an egg. It's like, where do we start? Because if we hear this one is going to fall apart, like, how are we going to do it?
So maybe, I mean, I think what you're trying to say is that like a Uber started with a fresh, clean slate, like mm-hmm. they had a clean canvas. Now, if you look at an old South African bank that has been going for like years, they have to kind of rethink the model now. And I think what Aga's kind of getting to is, what would be an advice for a old stuffy in quotes company to try and refocus themselves? Because mm-hmm. I think the conversations we sometimes have is that you go in and you have this customer experience conversation and the leadership understands that it's important.
Of course.
But they have so many other things that they have to plug the holes, and try and fix.
Yeah, correct. If I had the answer, I would be running Deloitte or something else worldwide. So I don't have a golden recipe for how to do that. I think it is about making a strategic statement and saying, what is it we would like to accomplish 3 to 5 years from now? How should it be to be a customer of this company? What is the experience? By defining that, you can say, okay, this is what we do. We talked about earlier when we prepared for this talk that the innovation dilemma guru Clayton Christensen has said you need to take out the dilemma into a separate company. So you reinvent yourself outside of your own company and then you can integrate it back in. That is one way of, let's so-called, organize around it. But otherwise it is to clearly defined, and then as with everything, top management commitment. If you have that, you will get there. If you don't have it, if it's like, okay, we have our innovation department over here, they do innovation. That means you will never get innovation. Or we have our UX, CX sitting in a roof somewhere and everybody else is somewhere else. It's a clear signal. This will not have an impact. Whereas if it's integrated in the business process, so you look first at what are the processes that we have that brings the product from A to B, or a new product from non-existing to existing. Do we have UX in there? Just like we have financial controlling. If you get that into the development process, then it begins to have an impact. If it's something you do on the side, it's like, we are building houses and we have an architect who comes once in a while to look at it, then it will look terrible. But if the architect is in the whole process, then you have at least a chance that you will have a nice house at the end of the day.
What you're talking about is orchestration of something. It's like it's a combination of multiple aspects of the business, not just one thing.
Of course. But actually, there is another thing that many companies struggle with. So basically, many companies start having customer experience management programs or departments. And often these departments are set in a way that they come and basically point their fingers and tell everybody, you are doing your job badly because you didn't take your customer into account. And from both our experiences, typically the reaction is that the other people who've been doing their jobs for a long time and being successful with those jobs, they say like, okay, I'm not going to talk to you because you are coming and undermining my capability of doing my job. And there is the whole problem of people not wanting to integrate customer experience into business because it comes with, like you said, controlling, but not with other things.
I get inspired by what you're saying, but it will be a long story and then we come back to the point. I've recently been to a music festival, 34 guys in a camp. One of them was newly appointed managing director of a city train line in the second biggest city in Denmark. And there's been a lot of disputes about this train line. So it's a train, it's like a tram train going through the city. And there's been delays and overrun on cost and many other things. Latest article was that it's driving too slow, so actually it's faster to take your bicycle and so on. And this is after you have spent, you know, billions on establishing it. So here's the newly appointed managing director. He's been there about half a year. The train tram has been in operation for about 2 months, and we sat and had a beer listening to some music, and I said to him, what is your KPI? What is it you really focus on that defines I'm successful? And he said, that is to be on time. And then we started debating this. At no point in time did the word customer come up. It was an infrastructure project. His train, trams, whatever they're called, should be on time. Then he's successful. Doesn't matter if the customer experience of getting in, out, getting to and from, and the speed and whatsoever is good. It is, I'm on time, I'm successful. So what I want to come to is that surprisingly, many, many companies still don't understand that they are here for the customer. Whether it's B2B or B2C or B2B2C or whatever it is, remember that at the end of the day, somebody pays the bill. You would be surprised that many, many companies haven't even realized yet that the customers are paying their bills. I started in telecom when we were still a monopoly service. I have spent in the management of the Danish telecom, in the management room every Wednesday, 4.5 years, and I never heard the word customer. It was all about the unions, it was about technology, never the word customer. Only when it became liberalized did the word customer begin to sneak into the management language, and some businesses are still not fully there yet.
Generally recognized KPI for customer experience is NPS and Net Promoter Score, which is a very controversial measure for many people because on the one hand it's a good benchmark, on the other hand it's not very actionable in, you know, what should change in order to increase it. It's also influenced by external factors that the company may not have influence on.
Well, let's start somewhere else. What you cannot measure, you cannot manage. So you need to measure something, because otherwise it's all gut feeling, which can be good long way, but it's not the perfect way of managing. I believe Net Promoter Score has proven to be a good tool, but not the only good tool, because as you rightfully say, it is about the circumstances, the moment where you ask the question. So if you walk into a shop and you walk out and somebody is asking you, how was your experience? Most likely, it was a good experience because you are caught right at the moment when you leave the shop with something. For sure, NPS is only part of what you need to know about your customer experience. As you know, we used it quite a lot at Play, also both transactional and relationship. We were trying to dig deeper and understand why did people say 9 or 6 or 1 or 0 or whatever it was. And here's also an art you need to master, which is, when is it relevant to ask and how deep can I analyze? I'm quite frequently traveling, so I'm flying, I'm renting cars, staying in hotels. I have to say now, Net Promoter Score measurements has become a nuisance. You can almost not eat a hamburger today without the hamburger stand. And it says, how was your experience today at the Steph's hamburger stand? And you go, oh, again. Industry have to be careful about how much attention do we want from our customers in order to improve our service, or are there other measurements where you can actually get the same results but without the nuisance of constantly sending questionnaires to your customers when they are busy doing something else. I'm not exaggerating if I say I could spend 15 minutes every day on answering Net Promoter Scores from restaurants, car rental, from airlines, where you give your data because you would like to be friendly or because it's based on the payment, and then you're immediately, let's call it, attacked with an NPS, and then you answer one or two questions and you think that was fine, and then when you answer something that is interesting, then you get the next question and the next and the next, and you go, does this have an end? You know, now I started, now I need to finish it. It is a bit of a nuisance. So we have to be careful as industry in general, because otherwise they would say zero, not based on the experience, but based on I'm annoyed now because I again get an NPS questionnaire. Just historically, NPS has proven to be, at least in my understanding, the best and most accurate way of measuring will this service be recommended, because that's the other element. It's the word of mouth that we all know. If you say, I was in this shop, it was bad, 10 people will not go there. If you were in this shop and you say it was good, at least one person, the one listening, probably will go there.
We did the study. So they were supposed to write either a love or divorce letter to a telecom, because it was like brother, it was with all the competition. And then we were asking them, it was pretty awesome, that some of those letters were like really hilarious. And I remember that afterwards we were asking them how many people they told the stories that led to this letter. And then it was really confirmed that they would tell the bad story to 11 people on average, that they would tell the story long after it happened. So like, you know, there was no time frame for stopping to tell that story. The positive stories, they were like fewer. It was like about 3 to 6, I remember. And it was also like people would tell the story for a year or 2 years and then they would stop.
Just as an anecdote, you know that I moved from Poland recently. I have two domiciles. I'm based in Vienna. I'm based in Copenhagen. So I have to take a decision. Do I use the Austrian mobile number as my main number or the Danish mobile number? The fact is, this decision was based on, funny enough, it's the same company, but which of the two companies offer the best digital experience for me to check my bills and change something if I want to change something. So it's, both of them are from Hutchinson, free, but the Danish platform apparently is more developed in the customer experience, so that's today my main number, despite the fact that other services are based out of my Viennese location. This shows that there is an impact, and the customer experience is important for what we choose at the end of the day. We believe that we are rational people. We always look for what is the value I get for my money. I think we have seen many times that it was around 25 to 30% who really analyze, and the rest believe that if what I get is reasonable for what I pay, then I'm actually happy, and then the rest is based on the customer experience.
Yeah, I remember this data. It was like people think that they are so pragmatic, but bottom line, we are all emotional about our decisions. Yeah.
I was recently traveling and I was thinking about our podcast, but one thing I observed as a designer myself, we tend to think about customers and we really focus about customer experience. And in being in the airport, I see these poor employees running around trying to deal with all the irate travelers, and it must be a huge thing for them. And I started thinking about that. One of the front lines of a company is actually some of these frontline staff members. Do you think maybe it's not that important in telecoms, for example, because it's very digitally driven, but do you think there's enough focus, for example, on employee experience? Because it's ultimately also the employees that are going to express the service to the customer at the end of the day.
And you're very right that the employees needs to be the ambassador of the customer experience service strategy you have. You can define whatever you want. Unless your employees are supporting that, nothing happens. The best example, now you're South African, you're not British, but then otherwise you would know in 1989, British Rail, who had been under scrutiny for bad service for many, many years, ran a big advertising campaign. Now we deliver train on time. All the employees said, you know, guys, nothing has changed. How is this going to happen? Of course it didn't happen. You know, an advertising campaign changes nothing. You need to change it from the inside. And once you have changed it, you can communicate it. Yeah?
It's something that I think of a lot, is that I was an advertising agency and we worked on a campaign for one of the big South African banks. And they were number one for service. And when we worked on the strategy, we said, listen, if it's about service, we need to flip it inward to employees because they are the people who are delivering the number one for service. But we got vetoed and it was turned into a TV ad. And the employee part of it was completely cut out of it. So it became, we're number one for service, but no one is actually focusing on delivering that number one for service.
If you're interested in stories around how can you use your employees actively, the best example is Carlson, the CEO of Scandinavian Airlines, who in the mid-90s said, we turned the pyramid around. So I'm not the head of the company. The people at the counter are at the head of the company. It was all about empowerment. It was about motivational schemes, whatever, in order to get the customer experience up. And he was hugely successful. Then he thought he could do it with everything, hotels and so on and so forth, and expanded way too fast, almost ran the company into bankruptcy. But on the customer experience, he understood that only the people at the counter can make a change, which again comes back to you can have perfect systems and not perfect people. That doesn't work. Perfect system cannot compensate for imperfect, I wouldn't say people, but service, mm-hmm. from the human interaction. Whereas if you have a bad system, but good people, the good people can compensate the bad system and say, I'm sorry, computer's down right now, but you know what? I write it down here, and I guarantee you, when you get home, we have solved everything. So the motivated people, the engaged people, can compensate for the bad systems, and then you can repair the systems over time. And you will eventually get a sublime customer experience.
Great insight.
Yeah. You know, after years in business, I realized that if there is not a good KPI, nothing's going to change. So coming back to NPS a little bit, I totally agree that the NPS changes things. And it changes things, even if it's not a perfect measure, it puts the focus on the fact that customer experience is important. But on the other hand, sometimes I think that NPS is a little bit of a lazy measure. You sort of expect that people will tell you what they need and then you will implement that. Wouldn't it be better if companies decide what sort of customer experience they want to deliver? So, you know, there's this problem right now that especially for big companies like telecoms, banks, insurances, they typically say that we are serving everybody, so we cannot afford not to do something. So it's a very hard decision. Wouldn't it be a better customer experience if they actually said that?
As I said in the beginning, a strategy needs to define also what you're not doing, who you're not serving, which products you're not developing, etc. To your comment on NPS, I would say of all the imperfect measurements, this is the best imperfect mm-hmm. tool you have. And then you combine it with other measurements. So you have your brand pyramid, preferred buying options, or who is it you will choose as your next provider if you had a free choice. So you can have a fantastic net promoter score, yet your customers are running away. And you go, okay, why is that? Is it our brand? Is it our value positioning? What is it that is missing? So NPS is, in my view, the best of the imperfect tools. And then you need to supplement it with other measurements which is relevant for your business. If you are in a production business, it must be something about the quality of the product or the failure rate. If you are in a consumer business, it's brand positioning, etc., that you need to complement to see, is the NPS that we have over here also reflected in our brand positioning, buying preferences? So it's not a standalone tool. Mm-hmm. It is a tool you need to supplement with something else.
Part of the premise of the podcast is that we're also thinking about where customer experience is going next, right? And one thing I wanted to ask you, because I mean, I'm a consultant myself, an AGA, and I also deal with a whole bunch of designers, and we don't always get to talk to a CEO. If that chance ever comes up and we want to come and share an idea or talk about customer experience, what are the important aspects that we need to keep in mind? What keeps you awake at night? How do I need to approach it?
I don't think I have a good answer to that. At the end of the day, almost all businesses established in order to give a return to their shareholders. Net Promoter Score, brand pyramids, buying preferences, and everything we do to improve our return to our investors. At the end of the day, the same applies for employee satisfaction. I'm a firm believer that you work for money one day a month and you work for fun the rest of the month. All of that comes together. But if you want to have the ear of the average CEO, when you talk about design, when you talk about customer experience, it is about, are you interested in learning how we can actually improve the returns with the means we already have available? We just use them better. Because coming back to your comment, Aga, I don't believe there's somebody delivering the product to everybody. The state-owned railway, maybe. But then again, they don't deliver to people who only drive by car. There will always be some segmentation. And the focus on that segmentation is very important. When we look back at Play and what we did and where, I believe at least we can say we were good, we were better than the average, was our consistency. That we consistently worked on the same perception, the same brand image, the same positioning, that we persistently worked on improving the customer experience, not as fast as our customer experience people would like to have it, but faster than...
I'm getting that.
But faster than, let's say, some of our product developers would like to do it. And a very important word in all management here is no. That we say, okay, if we want to have a better experience, the shortcut you're about to implement is a no-no. We don't do this because that will have a negative influence on our customer experience. We are now here today. It's actually Amazon Prime Day. I understand that Amazon have huge problems with their Prime Day. Somebody must have read this and say, okay, what was it we implemented recently that made the Prime experience a subprime experience? Yes. That is important that we... When you think seriously about customer experience, it is about the consistency, because once it's consistently bad, you can start improving it. So rather say no sometime to new developments if the yes would mean that you have something that is inconsistent with what you have had so far. So consistency, focus, and think customer. Not like the guy with the train tram, yeah. Train on time. We don't care if there's anybody in them. Actually, he could drive trains back and forth and he would be so happy, you know, even if there's nobody in them.
They would be on time for sure.
I was recently in a workshop, but we were talking about the system of a company and we were all investigating how the company works and how the employees, factors that affect the company. And someone observes, like, guys, we have no customers here.
I have to say, to his defense, because I'm always fair to people, that particular service was actually divided into an infrastructure part and a service part. And he was the CEO of the infrastructure part. Even if you only run the infrastructure, you should think about who uses it and how can they be happy about my infrastructure.
Great point.
Yeah. So what do you think is the future for customer experience in the coming years?
Will be booming, and here we're coming back to what we touched briefly upon in the beginning, the IIR, artificial intelligence. that will bring a whole new dimension to customer experience. The prediction of what you want, the much more precise delivery of what you want. So I think just like digitization probably today is 2% down the road and we have 98% missing or even more, customer experience is, okay, let's say 5% down the road. And for businesses, there's another 95% to be gained and developed. Because at the end of the day, that is the differentiating factor. Whether it is microphones, computers, mobile phones we're using, cars, trains we are taking, food we are eating, it will be the experience, the total experience around it, that will determine do we take the red one or the blue one in the future.
This is awesome.
Yeah. Just one last question. Yeah. So if you were to tell to people like us one thing that we should remember going forward with this whole idea of customer experience into the future, what would it be?
Well, you have to remember that you are also addressing customers. Most businesses are here in order to give a return. I'm a firm believer that better customer experience does give you a better return, but all in all, that is the return that the business will be focused on. I mean, the richest companies in the world are here, and we have them in front of us. Apple this, Apple that, because one person was completely focused on the customer experience. And I remember in 2007 when the iPhone came, many people have been in the telco for many years, this will never fly because they don't produce mobile phones. A friend of mine said, listen, this is a new experience. This is the way everybody else wanted it to be. And this is what is going to change everything. Not the fact that it's a screen, but the fact that now it's available for everybody. Children, young ones, senior ones and even old ones can now use this device. And he was right. User experience changed everything.
Thank you so very much. Awesome talking to you. Hey, that was Aga and Werner, and was catching the Next Wave podcast. And we will be back.
Definitely. Thanks, Aga.
Thank you.